When we started LCC Connect in 2022, our aim was to create a podcast network that connects our college with the community and our community with the college. Since then, we've expanded to offer more than 30 podcasts, all of which are hosted by members of Lansing Community College or folks within our community. I'm Dedalian, General Manager for LCC Connect, and on today's episode, I'll be sitting down with Tamara McDiarmid. After devoting herself to decades of public service, upon retirement, Tamara transitioned into teaching and mentoring the next generation of public service professionals. She now serves as the Director of Public Service Careers at Lansing Community College. In 2025, her leadership and dedication to students were recognized when she received LCC's Administrator of the Year Award. And if you spend even a few minutes talking with Tamara about her work, it's easy to see why. She brings a deep sense of purpose, high standards, and real passion for helping students reach their full potential. Now she brings that passion to the mic with a new podcast called Silver and Blue, tracing the roots of policing and corrections. The show explores the history of policing, corrections, and justice systems across centuries and across cultures. Silver and Blue joins the LCC Podcast Network on Tuesday, April 21st. Now let's go behind the scenes and find out what's happening behind the connection. 25 years with the Kent County Sheriff's Office before heading to LCC. Criminal justice is what you always kind of wanted to get into. So what first inspired you to do it?
Back in the 70s, 80s, there was a lot of really good vibes about being in public safety, police. And I always kind of wanted to serve the community. I had a strong community background. That's just kind of way I was brought up. And, you know, I watched TV. I wanted to be the one to catch the bad guy too. But it was more a strong sense of serving the community that kind of got me interested.
Okay, so I got two questions based on that. First of all, I've got to ask you, because I'm a TV guy, grew up on TV, love TV. What was the 70s, 80s go-to TV show that you were like, wow, I really want to do this?
There was one show, it was called The Rookies. And so I did watch that. And then the big one that, of course, you remember I was in middle school, so I had a bedtime, but it was Charlie's Angels.
Okay.
Was another one that I watched a lot. All right.
Chips was my go-to. So
yeah, I watched that too.
The way you describe that, it doesn't sound like necessarily, and I find this a lot of the times with anybody in public service careers, that it's a part of their family. So were you the first one to get into law enforcement in your family?
Yes, I was. Yeah. I was.
Okay. Am I right about that? That typically it tends to be a generational.
It does tend to be generational.
Yeah.
And it just so happened to be that I was the first one in my family, except for a cousin that lives in North Carolina. There's only two of us. It's just him and me.
Okay.
Nobody else in our family has gotten involved in public safety at all.
So do they look at you like you're the black sheep?
Or yeah.
Do they really?
No, they don't. No, they don't.
Okay. During your time with the sheriff's office, you worked your way up to corrections sergeant. What did those years teach you the most about the profession itself?
Being a corrections officer, you learned patience. You learned not to be judgmental. And you learned really how to use your ability to communicate. Because I think what maybe people don't understand is corrections officers don't have weapons inside the facility.
Right.
So the only weapon that we have per se, which is our ability to de-escalate situations and our ability to talk through things. So you learn very quickly how to be able to handle yourself through talking. I mean, there are always going to be times when you couldn't do that, but for the most part, that's the first route you take. As I gained through and I got through the ranks, some of the things that I learned being a sergeant is you got to be able to separate the personal with the professional.
That makes sense.
You rise through the ranks. So I went to a sergeant from being an officer. And so you have to be able to separate those because now you're going to be the one telling people that you have worked with for many years, you know, kind of what to do or what's expected.
Right.
And the other thing is that respect is earned. And I was very lucky because I had the respect of a lot of the officers. And I also saw the byproduct of supervisors that didn't.
Well, based on that answer, I mean, you can tell you're just a good communicator, first of all. And I will say that you do a great job on that podcast, a very good at doing some storytelling. You can tell you put a lot of thought into what you're doing. A lot of the same traits that you mentioned, patience, judgment, communicator, even separating the personal from the professional. These are all great traits also for anybody teaching a class. And that was the thing is you actually retired from law enforcement, right? And then you came here to LCC to teach. So what made you want to move into teaching after you got done?
I was part of the base training corps of officers, and I was the sergeant in the training unit for 5 years toward the end of my career. But I found I had a love of training. Mm-hmm. So whether it was training new officers or whether I was in the in-service training veteran officers, I found that I really enjoyed bringing that information to the officers, whether it was a reminder of what signs to look for in inmates that might be becoming suicidal, or whether it was just informing our new officers what it was like first day on the job or something along those lines. I also realized at a pretty early age that I was going to be eligible for retirement way before I was going to be old enough to actually be able to not work. Mm-hmm. So I went back to school late 90s, early 2000s to get my master's degree. And with that, I chose a path that would give me the credentials to be an instructor. So I decided pretty early on that that was going to be the next phase of my life. So I was very fortunate that I got to retire at a very young age to be able to go into a second job. And the training aspect of it just gave me the confidence to actually want to go into teaching. And that's kind of where I went from there.
Is there a preference, like actually being out there in the field and teaching, that you've kind of found that you've gravitated more towards and enjoy more?
Not that I enjoy more. I enjoyed being a corrections officer and sergeant for different reasons than I enjoy being here at LCC as a teacher. Mm-hmm. They just have different aspects that give gratification on different levels. So I don't really like one more than the other. Mm-hmm. They've both been able to give me very satisfaction in different levels at different times of my life.
That makes sense.
It was a natural progression for me to be able to go from being in the career to being able to prepare others for the career. It just seemed like a very natural progression.
Yeah. Kind of the answer I expected you to give me, not for any other reason other than in the short time that I've known you or got to know you better, I think I should say, you seem very passionate about the things you do. And that's excellent. It's a great trait to have right there. So a lot of folks that are listening to this aren't quite familiar with LCC and all the different things we do. And of course, LCC plays a huge role in preparing people for careers in public safety. Now, public safety, to most people, I think outside of LCC, might not register as to what that is. So what kinds of programs are available to students here at LCC?
Our public safety department is pretty expansive in what we can offer students here. It's three main programs. So we have criminal justice, and we have the fire science program, and then we have legal studies. And so within those umbrella programs, what we have are other avenues within each of those umbrella programs that students can choose to study within. Mm-hmm. So within criminal justice, we have associate's degrees and certificates in law enforcement and a general associate's that are for students who may be looking at transferring. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of transfer agreements with universities in the state of Michigan.
Sure.
We also have an associate's and a certificate program that will cater to students that are looking for corrections. And sometimes our students don't understand, or the public at large doesn't understand, that corrections is much more than institutional corrections.
Right.
So it could be for students who are looking to maybe serve in a probation or parole aspect, mm-hmm. or maybe in alternative corrections such as halfway houses or substance abuse homes. And then we also have an associate's degree and a certificate for our juvenile justice population, which means working in youth homes or detention centers or something along those lines. And then we've just, in the last 4 years or so, put together an associate's and a certificate for digital evidence specialist, which is a cooperative effort with our CIT, Computer Information Technology program, where students who maybe don't want to work in law enforcement or corrections, juvenile, but they want to be of service to their community in some way and are very technology savvy. Mm-hmm. And so they want to maybe be the one on the cutting edge of cyber criminals, mm-hmm. and wanting to be helping law enforcement that way. And then we have our fire program. And so we have two associate's degrees, one for the firefighter who also wants to be an EMT. So we collaborate with HHS, the Health and Human Services, and they'll get their firefighter at Tech Careers, and then they'll go to HHS and get their EMT, and then they get their gen eds and they're good to go. And then we also have, again, a degree for somebody who may not want to be a firefighter, but want to be in the sector doing other things, fire investigator, maybe installation of fire equipment somewhere, something like that. That degree also caters to firefighters who are looking to advance in their own departments. And so they will need a degree for that. And so we help them with that. And then our legal studies program is a 2-year degree for those who are looking to work in a law office as either a paralegal or a legal assistant. And then we have a post-bachelor certificate for those that already have a bachelor's degree, maybe looking to change a career or look for something different, and they can come in and they can get a certificate. On top of all of those programs, then we have our three academies. We have a police academy that runs 16 weeks. We have a fire academy that runs 16 weeks. And then our local corrections academy that runs 4 weeks, all accredited through state agencies here in Michigan.
So while we were talking about a lot of that, I kind of thought, you know what? What if Tammy piqued somebody's interest, you know, wanted to find out more? If you were to talk to somebody about it and explain to them, well, these are traits that would make you a person that's fit for public service careers, especially in law enforcement, what would you tell them?
Somebody who's thinking about getting into law enforcement really should think about things like, again, stuff I've mentioned before, communication skills, and the ability to listen, the ability to interact with many diverse communities, but also the willingness to adapt to situations that are changing all the time, and the ability to work with many different kinds of people, because if the community is diverse, then your workplace is going to be diverse. And then the last thing, and probably one of the most important things entering anything in public safety, is to have integrity and honesty, because the public looks upon you to be a very honorable and upstanding person who reflects the community at large. And so you hear about and see on all social media all of the bad things that can happen or do happen when officers are not showing integrity and honesty and stuff like that. They're very few. You see only the bad ones.
Sure.
And that ends up giving a very bad impression of all police officers, and that's really just not true. You really should have that inner strength to have the integrity to carry on all the time, whether you're in a uniform or not.
You know, I don't remember the exact statistic. I'm just going to go ahead and throw it out there and just say whatever it is that I thought it was. But I was remembering somebody, as you were saying that, where you have to basically offer 3 to 4 good compliments to 1 bad compliment. And I think that almost translates to kind of what you're saying in a way, where that you almost have to have an encounter or an interaction with 3 to 4 law enforcement individuals where it was a positive experience to the one. And so somebody like viewing it from the outside, you're going to see that one more than you are, or it's going to be shown. What's the word I'm looking for? You know what I'm trying to say here?
Yeah. They're going to remember the one.
Yes. Yes.
Before they do the three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's unfortunate, but it is the way our world works. And you also mentioned in there change. Change is a good way to segue over to the notion of your podcast, because a lot of things have changed. A lot of things have stayed the same. So it's called Silver and Blue, Tracing the Roots of Policing and Corrections. So obviously history is a part of what you're doing here. What inspired the idea and desire to do this?
I've been wanting to do a podcast for a while. And when the opportunity came to come on LCC Connect, it was a great opportunity. I can use the knowledge I have, and I can also do some research. I'm a huge history fan. I love history. And this allows a platform for education and information. And I think one of the things that public safety really needs is a kind of a continual information highway where the public can learn more than what they see in TV and movies. If that can come from something that I'm able to provide, I think that would be great. If you're ever given an opportunity to educate or give information about something that you're very passionate about, I think you have to grab that and use it to the best of your ability. And I think this podcast can give us an opportunity to quell some rumors, quell some assumptions of what law enforcement corrections is. I think over the years, so many people have seen more bad than good. And
or as we noted earlier, they reflect or notice the bad more than the good.
Correct. And so I think this might give me an opportunity to not only talk a little bit about that, but to go back and say, this is kind of how we got here. And so it's not just what's happening now. It's something that's been here all along. And this is why. And hopefully it'll start a dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, and that's all I kind of want is somebody paying attention enough to go, I think I want to talk about this a little more. Or a couple of people who are friends are listening to it and they're going, that sounds interesting. I never knew that. Let's talk about that a little bit more. Something that can start a dialogue is a good thing and something that I've always kind of wanted.
Tell me a little bit more about how you feel understanding the history of policing and corrections is an important thing for folks to know.
This is just kind of my opinion, but I think a lot of people don't put a lot of stock in history. And so when they look at what's going on today, they don't take into account that a lot of what's happening today is a byproduct of what has happened years and years and years and years and a millennia and centuries and stuff ago. And I think by listening to the podcast, what they're going to realize is that a lot of stuff that we still deal with today, a lot of stuff that started and that we have in our systems today is not all that original. It's something that's that had been thought of and put into place, you know, a millennia ago or centuries ago or decades ago. And once they kind of realize that this isn't a new concept, maybe it'll start people to think about how we can change it or how we can talk about it more to other people who might think that maybe it's a change that's needed. It's something that I'm just providing information to.
Yeah.
And make kind of the statement that we didn't get here just by ourselves. We got here from generations upon generations upon generations of encountering the same things. And they handled it this way, and then society changed, so they handled it this way, and then society changed, and they handled it this way. And we got here to 2026. So what was it that influenced that society that all of a sudden made this society do either the same thing or a different thing? And nobody makes that correlation. And that's what I want to bring into the podcast, is a realization that what happened in the 18th century absolutely did influence what happens in the 21st century. Right. You just don't know how.
Right. And as the producer, of course, I've got the opportunity to listen to some of what you already have recorded and done. And it has been interesting to me to actually be able to kind of listen and go, wow, we are still kind of like that in some respects, but we aren't this. So in other words, something where it's just so... so off base that you're like, wow, I am glad we are not a part of that society to this day. Can you give listeners an idea of what kinds of topics you're exploring at this point in time?
I decided to try and start right at the beginning of the first civilization that really had any sort of codified laws. So one of the classes that I taught was an introduction to corrections. And so one of the big things is that we give a history of a lot of stuff. And one of the first things is we talk about is where did law come from? What made it so that there was a law and then there was a consequence if there was that law broken? And so we start right with ancient Mesopotamia, which is probably the first documented society or civilization that had any sort of codified laws. And so we're going back to 3,000 years ago, and we're continuing to then move to different civilizations that started to show how they handled society and the people that were in their civilization and what their idea of law and order and disorder, what happened when people didn't follow the rules,
right,
and how they handled the punishment or the consequence of that. And so starting at the beginning, I felt was a great way to start sort of sequencing the way so that we can kind of move all the way to the 21st century. And, you know, I'm not going to go decade by decade, but we're going to go in periods of time where certain things happened that were instrumental in forming how we got where we are today.
Yeah.
And it felt really natural to just start at the beginning.
I think that completely makes sense. So in your experience, you know, as you're talking about all of this, what's the one thing the public might misunderstand about the corrections profession?
I think a lot of it is just not knowing anything. But I think if there's one thing that you would ask or that they might not understand is that we're high-paid babysitters that we're uneducated and we don't need a lot of skills or education to perform the job. And that really is unfair to the men and women who work in corrections.
Certainly.
Because the clientele that are dealt with are very difficult at times. And the other thing that I think is a misconception is, especially in institutional corrections, is that the terms jails and prisons are interchangeable, and they're not. There's a distinct difference. And while they're similar because they're institutions, the clientele that are in these institutions are extremely different. And the misunderstanding of the corrections profession to begin with is that it's a job that kind of can be done by anybody. And we're trying and have been trying for the last 40 years or more to show the public that you need to have baseline knowledge. You need to have that education. Because having the communication skills, having the listening skills, having the knowledge of the legal know-how at an officer level to be able to do your job efficiently and correctly is necessary so that you don't keep seeing the one bad thing that happens. And we have 3,300 jails across the United States and hundreds of prisons over the 50 states that we have, which means there are thousands and thousands and thousands of corrections officers who are not given the credit for the job that they do every day. At least not in the same vein the police officers are. And not to say that we're different. We're all part of what I call the criminal justice triangle. Okay, so you have law enforcement, and you have the courts, and you have corrections. You can't have one without the other when you're looking at that triangle. So everybody knows law enforcement and courts, but the corrections part is just one that sort of falls into the background because we're unseen. We're the gatekeepers. And so there's great misunderstanding that I hope with this podcast I can sort of quell a little bit and bring understanding to.
So that's kind of the one takeaway that you're kind of hoping folks will get out of this by listening to even a historical perspective and kind of the things you're saying?
Absolutely. And some of it's not going to be pretty. Historically, corrections up until, you know, the 20th century was not pretty, but you have to learn from that to get where we are. And I hope listeners will stick with me for the ride.
So we unpacked a lot today.
Yeah, we did.
And you did warn me that you could be a little bit long-winded. I wouldn't say long-winded. I would say passionate is the way I would put you.
You
definitely can tell you have a love for what you do, and you can hear it in the podcast itself. So I am so glad that you're a part of LCC Connect and you're doing what you're doing. We actually went a little bit long, so I'm going to go ahead and wrap things up. But I want to mention all the things that you do. You build programs. You mentor students. You've been a part of public safety and law enforcement, corrections. Shaping future public service professionals is partly what you're doing now. So what part of that impact means the most to you personally when you're teaching those classes or working with potential law enforcement or other service careers too?
I think it having the impact on students.
Yeah.
When you can guide them to where their passion is going to be. I was faculty for 8 years before I moved into the director's mm-hmm. position. And over the years, to be able to have that kind of impact on somebody and be able to guide them or direct them the way that they feel their career would be best. Mm. And sometimes that wasn't corrections. Mm. You know, sometimes that was sitting down with them and going, where do you really find your interest? And they would say, well, I really want to work as a crime scene investigator. So I go, okay, you need to do this. It's not going to be here, mm-hmm. but if this is where you want to go, this is where I would suggest. And that would be for them. Do I lose a student in my program? Probably. But it also means that they can serve their community the way that they want.
Right.
And that's okay. So mentoring students, helping students prepare, that was why I got into teaching to begin with, was to prepare the next generation of public servants. That was what I felt was part of my responsibility, was to prepare the next generation. And I think I've done that.
Yeah, I don't know that this necessarily applies to what you're saying, but one of the things that came to mind, and something that's talked about a lot of the times here at LCC, is the fact that part of being a student is sometimes learning that, oh, that's not actually what I want to do.
Correct.
And finding the path you want to go.
Absolutely.
Silver and Blue, Tracing the Roots of Police and Corrections, joins the LCC Connect podcast network. It's going to be Tuesday, April 21st. It'll show up at 2 p.m. at our website, as well as most major streaming platforms. You can find it almost everywhere. Thanks so much for listening to Behind the Connection, the show that takes you behind the scenes of LCC Connect. And thank you, Tammy, so much for coming in and talking with me.
Thank you for having me.
And of course, thank you for being a part of LCC Connect. I am so looking forward to this and looking forward to people getting a chance to hear what you had to say.
Thank you.
Very last question of the day. I cannot tell you what it is because you know why? I don't know what it is. So we're going to click the rando question generator. What is something that you can never seem to finish?
Oh, wow. I can never seem to finish a book.
A book? Really?
I've got about four of them going right now. I can never seem to finish a book.
I do that same thing, but with audiobooks as well. I feel your pain, actually.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Yep.
Paperwork or training day, which would you choose if you had to?
Training day.
Every time?
Every time.
There was no hesitation there.
No.
Not at all.
This is LCC Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
If you're considering returning to school, exploring career options, or needing support in life transitions, Lansing Community College has the Adult Resource Center available to qualified students. The Adult Resource Center staff provides one-on-one appointments, registration assistance, referrals to community and campus resources, tuition and childcare grants, academic advising, and other helpful tools to help with your educational career. To find out more information, visit lcc.edu and search Adult Resource Center.
Hi, I'm Greg Laddick, and I host a show called Stars on Sports with Assistant Athletic Director Stephen Cutter here on LCC Connect. It's all about Lansing Community College Athletic Department. You can always find out more about Stars on Sports and listen on demand at lccconnect.org.
If you or someone you know lives with epilepsy, be aware of an uncommon but fatal complication called sudden unexpected death in epilepsy, also known as SUDEP. It is the sudden unexpected death of a person with epilepsy who is otherwise healthy. Each year, SUDEP kills 1 in 1,000 adults with epilepsy and 1 in 4,500 children with epilepsy. The American Academy of Neurology and the American Epilepsy Society have released a new medical guideline to help patients, families, and caregivers better understand SUDEP and its risk factors. A high risk factor is generalized tonic-clonic seizures that involve the entire body. The guideline shows that reducing the number of tonic-clonic seizures could lower the risk of SUDEP. If you have epilepsy, it is important that you talk with your neurologist. To learn more about SUDEP, visit aan.com/guidelines. That's AAN.com/guidelines.
Founded in 1957, LCC has addressed the needs of Michigan industries through education for more than 65 years. Anchored by the downtown campus located in the heart of Lansing, LCC serves mid-Michigan communities with additional campuses in Delta Township and East Lansing. The college offers more than 200 degree and certificate programs and is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Those interested in learning more about LCC may visit lcc.edu/youbelong.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Crawl out from under your bridges because it's time for Trolling the Mitten. Your favorite local comedy podcast where we bring you the best and brightest from the Great Lakes State. I'm your host, Errol Gribble, a Michigan Reconnect student here at Lansing Community College in the Digital Media, Audio, and Cinema program, where, just like in nature, stars are forged through exposure to pressure and a lot of hot air. Welcome back to Trolling the Mitten. I'm your host, Errol Gribble, and today I am thrilled to be joined by dear friend and incredible Michigan performer, actress Stephanie Nichols. Steph is an accomplished union stage actor, teaching artist, choreographer, and director who's performed on stages across the state like Meadowbrook, Tipping Point, and so many others. And one of her many gigs, just like me, is bringing history to life as a historical reenactor at Greenfield Village. If you've ever wandered through the market at the village, you may have met her as the incomparable Mary Judge. And during the summer of 2024, I dragged Steph up to Lansing to the LCC studio, and I forced her to play that role for me. So today, thanks to Steph's talent and the magic of radio, we've gone back to the late 1800s, so Mary Judge herself can give us a tour of Detroit's Central Market. As a special treat, I jump in and play some of the other folks we meet along the way. They are not historical characters, unlike Mary Judge. As always, everything you're about to hear is completely improvised on the spot. No rehearsal, no planning, no prop. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Today is a first for Trolling the Mitten, and maybe for anybody. We have time travel, ladies and gentlemen. I have all my recording equipment here, getting some strange looks from folks, I'm not going to lie. But we are at the Detroit Central Market, and the year is 1888. I have here with us the first woman huckster, and I mean that in the kindest sense possible, Mary Judge, on the show. Mary, thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, this is delightful. I'm not quite sure what exactly I'm doing here, but if it helps me sell some of my wares, I'm all for it.
Absolutely. Think of this as like something that's going to go on a record that people can play and listen to later.
Oh, a record now.
Yep, so that little thing you got in your hand, that there's a microphone.
Oh.
Yeah, and we're going to just record your voice, and we're going to get some sounds from the market and maybe talk to some other people here, and then I will take that back to the future with me.
Oh, well now, should I tell you what I'm selling today?
Oh, please. Well, I know a lot about you. I'm a big fan of you.
Queen of the market, some folks call me.
We still do.
Oh, and I'm still queen of the market.
It's still queen. Well, you know, when we talk about the market.
Oh.
So, but a lot of listeners might not know who you are. So tell us about yourself.
Well, I was born in Ireland, which you might be able to tell.
Sure.
Of course, I left Ireland as a very small child and moved to Canada.
Oh.
Quebec, to be exact.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Now, if you can imagine, I was educated in a convent, me, Mary Judge.
Wow.
Well, that wasn't really the life for me. So no. I did continue my travels where I ended up in Detroit and I started to have a little stall outside the market. Very hard to break into.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, it's all nepotism. It's all who you know.
Oh, is it?
Oh, it is
indeed.
Yeah.
Politics in 1888.
Politics, you know, and when you're outside the market, the people inside the market complain about your stand and the police come and shut you down.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. So you gather up your wares as best you can, and then finally there was an opening, and I got it.
So you started outside the market.
I did, selling little candies and bits and bobs. Now, I did hear you use the term huckster. I prefer the term entrepreneur.
Of course.
But, you know, a lot of folks, I'm at the market day in and day out, hence my queendom.
Of course.
But a lot of folks, you know, they're not able to stay for long. Farmers have to go back and tend their fields, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, okay.
So I purchase the items they're unable to sell, and I resell them to make my living.
Oh.
Indeed. So today
that's
I got
quite the entrepreneurship of you. Absolutely.
I feel like it is. And so I've got lots of odds and ends, bits and bobs. You'll see my fresh flowers I've got here. I've got some produce. I've got some, I hate to say it, but I know they're not popular with everyone, but some pig knuckles, you know, that are left over from the butchers.
Yeah.
Yes, ooh, yes.
That's smelly.
Oh, yes. Fresh coffee. I always have fresh coffee. And I've made some gingerbread.
That does smell good. Now, how do you make your coffee? What's so special? I hear everybody's talking about Mary's coffee.
Just purchasing it from here and there. So my blend is my own blend.
Oh, I see. So you're like the coffee even is something you're reselling.
Exactly.
Oh, wow, Mary.
Exactly.
So is there anything that you yourself?
My gingerbread.
Oh, okay.
No, I get my flour, of course, from folks that are going back out to their farms.
Sure, sure.
So, but yeah.
But you make the gingerbread.
I do indeed.
I got to imagine that's a great way to upsell folks.
Oh, it's just the finest gingerbread in all the markets.
Yeah. So in 1888, for our listeners, this is a big, huge open air market. It's a beautiful building.
Oh, so if I was selling my gingerbread in 2024. Okay, so let's say my gingerbread right now, it'll cost you a nickel for a good size piece.
Oh,
you
wow.
Know, of course. And then I'd encourage you to pay me another nickel for some coffee.
Oh,
now what
is that a lot?
I can piece together my living that way,
sure,
day after day. Now, what would you say my costs would be in 2024?
Well, Mary, here in 2024, you want to sell that delicious homemade artisan loaf of bread you've made? You could charge, you know, $9, $10, $11 for that thing. $15, up to $15 in some markets.
What?
Yeah, that's right. Now, I should say a lot of things are more expensive than they would have been, you know.
Wait,
so
I could pay my rent for, I don't know, 6 months.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing is you'd probably be paying a lot more in rent. You know,
I don't know.
My wife pays most of my bills, so I'm not sure myself. But
You have a wife then?
Oh, indeed.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Very nice. That's nice indeed. I had a couple of husbands, you know.
Did you?
Oh, yes, I don't have them now.
Okay, so you're single and mingling.
Yes.
All right.
I suppose. I feel like I didn't have the best of luck, so perhaps I just would be on my own.
What do you mean?
Well, my first husband was, a bit of a ragamuffin, a bit of a scoundrel.
Oh,
and, he had a little bit of time in jail, didn't he?
Really?
Yes, where eventually he passed away, so sadly.
His fault for ending up there, I guess.
And then my second husband was even worse.
No, Mary likes the bad boys.
I guess, I suppose.
What was wrong with the second one?
Well, rumor has it, I found this out since he absconded with all my items and as much stuff as he could carry.
Like all of everything you were selling,
I started over after he left. And rumor has it that he already had a family.
Whoa, what a jerk.
I know.
I'm so sorry.
I know. So that's another word. Jerk. That's a good word.
Yeah. But no. Like, you know, it is like moving quickly.
Oh.
Right. Like a horse jerks you around.
Yes.
No, it means like a not nice person.
A scoundrel.
Yes.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. Sorry. I got to watch my slang, Mary.
I'm trying to. But you went back. I'm going to go back a bit. And you said that my bread was an artisan bread.
That's right.
I like that word. You know, instead of huckster, I like to say, entrepreneur. And instead of baker, I could say artisan.
That's right. Artisan baker.
Artisan baker.
Because there's lots of, anybody who considers what they do an art form can call themselves an artisan.
Okay.
It's a little overused in this day and age, but what are you going to do?
I feel like perhaps it's going to start in 1888 with me.
Folks, I don't know if I thought about like the repercussions of me going back in time. I hope I don't change history too much.
Well, I'm going to start calling people jerks.
Oh, great. Okay.
I'm going to start calling myself an artisan.
Okay, I think that's okay. That feels fine.
All right. What else you got? Give me some more.
Well, no, I want to know more about you, Mary. For the listeners at home, you know, we get around a lot faster than y'all do in 1888. So, you know, when you came down from Canada, like, how'd you get here? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. And the stagecoach part of the way, you know, and train lines. Train lines are running.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, of course. You know, because I didn't arrive in Detroit until 1863. And lines were well underway.
Yes, absolutely.
Coming right through Detroit, weren't they?
Oh, wow.
And I really liked it. And I really liked it. And I decided to stay. You know, I do have a family of means down in Illinois, and I was on my way to go there, but I like Detroit better. So I ended up staying.
So yeah. A family of means, what did they do?
Well, just business here and there, importing, exporting, whatnot. But shady?
Oh, yeah.
So like, that's under a tree?
Yeah, it also means, like, think about the kind of things that you don't want to bring to light.
Oh, I like that one too. Like my, let's say my husbands were shady.
Yeah, they absolutely. They
really
were.
So what I need, that's why I don't want any more husbands, because they're shady jerks.
That's right.
And an artisan such as myself deserves better than that.
Indeed, indeed.
Wow. This is, I don't know, what do you call it when you talk to someone and it makes you feel better? Is that something you do in your time?
Like, well, when we like boost each other's self-esteem.
Oh, there you go. Self-esteem.
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, I hope that was a thing.
Yes.
In 1888. Maybe that's why there's so many more therapists now.
What are they now?
Oh, it's a... boy, this is really taking a right turn. It's a therapist is someone you go to for your mental health. Yeah, like your husbands might have been mean or angry, you know.
Or jerks.
Were they violent ever? I hope not, but maybe.
One might have tended that way. The other one was just shady.
So it's kind of like going to see a doctor for the thoughts in your head.
Oh, I wish they could have talked to you. Everything might have ended differently.
Oh, I'm not a therapist.
Oh, you're not? It feels like you are, because I feel my self-esteem rising.
Oh, that's just us having a good time.
Uh-huh.
You make my self-esteem rise too, Mary.
Oh, I do?
So, absolutely.
So what am I, a therapist?
For me, currently, sure.
You know, I might hang out that shingle as well. I might say I'm a entrepreneur, artisan, therapist.
Yeah, that's great. You could give advice to people. I mean, technically, therapists, at least in my day and age, they got to go to school for it. But
I don't think we have those schools, so I'll just hang out my shingle and see what happens.
Yeah, good for you, Mary.
Yeah. Oh, you've given me so many good ideas.
Hey, that's not why I'm here, but I'm glad I'm helping.
Oh, no, you can't even imagine the things that happen at this.
Well, yeah, I have to ask. One of the few things I know about the Detroit Central Market is the Great Cucumber War.
Now, you do not.
We do. I heard tell a rumor that you were the one who started that.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, no.
No?
No, that does sound like me, I must admit. But I wasn't even here at the market yet when this happened.
Oh.
This happened a little bit before my time. I believe it was the Great Cucumber War of 1861.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Now, the way I hear it told, it was Mrs. King what started it.
Mrs. King.
Yes, you did. I did hear it. You know I did.
Oh, is that Mrs. King?
That's Mrs. King
here?
Over there.
No,
she is.
Who's Mrs. King?
Mrs. King. Oh, she's over there at the stall selling the produce.
Oh, so she's another vendor?
She still sells the produce.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
She does. So it was Mrs. King what started it. Yes. Mrs. King. Oh, do you have something to say for yourself?
Excuse me. Hi, ma'am. Are you Mrs. King?
Very nice to meet you. I'm Mrs. King. I have a vendor here in the market. I sell these vegetables for me and my husband.
Oh, wonderful. That's great. Mary, aren't you
here? I hate to interrupt here.
Stop interrupting, Mary.
No.
You're so bossy.
Okay, listen. It's not your turn for therapy. She can have her therapy when I'm done. Make her go away.
Once again, not a therapist.
Don't you tell me
what... Make her go away.
You are so bossy, and your coffee, it might be good, but it makes me poop my pants.
Okay. She's a spitfire, that one.
So when you hear that she's the one that started it, you might be tending to believe it.
No, yeah, absolutely.
But I can't speak to that because I wasn't there. All I know is that she and Elizabeth Schwartz were haggling over a price.
Now, Elizabeth Schwartz, who's that?
Elizabeth Schwartz was just a customer passing through.
Oh,
she's one of the regulars, we see her from time to time.
A member of the community.
Of the community, an upstanding member of the community.
Sure.
Yes, so they were haggling, And Mrs. King was not having it. You weren't having it.
I was having it. I did not start it. It was Jessica. It was all her. I was there. I was being a pleasant vendor. I was
is my, vest. Therapy time.
Fine.
Shh.
Yeah, you got to guess. Somebody, yep, okay.
Yes, I got my vegetables. Excuse me, I'll be right back.
You don't know. It's fine. You don't have to. You can stand gone. Okay.
Oh. I hope she gets a lot of sales.
Yeah, it looks like she's got a bit of a line, so hopefully that'll keep her over there for a while.
Yes. So.
So this upstanding member of the community.
Haggling over a price.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, one of them smacks the other one with a cucumber.
Wow, that sounds like it could hurt. Cucumbers are not a soft vegetable.
Wait, before you know it, everyone in the whole marketplace is throwing vegetables at one another.
No.
Oh, from what I hear tell, it went on for 20 minutes. By the time the police arrived, everyone was covered in green pulp and stained red with beet juice.
Oh. Wow. I mean, it sounds like funny.
Yes, but a terrible waste of cucumbers.
Sure, but also like... cucumbers, beets, they got carrots over there.
Carrots, lettuce, some of the things would sting, yeah.
Yeah, these are dangerous vegetables.
Yes, well,
was anyone seriously hurt?
Like, not that I know of. You'd have to ask Mrs. King, but don't. Don't ask her. I don't want her to come back over here.
Why don't you two, so you two don't get along, you and Mrs. King?
Well,
I get that vibe.
She's a little bit of competition, but that's healthy.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. So... the Great Cucumber War.
Yes.
It really involved cucumbers.
It really did. It started with cucumbers.
Wow.
Yeah. And then
and
it
you're
got
saying
worse.
Mrs. King is the one who probably.
Yes, but don't invoke her name because she might come back over here.
Oh, yeah.
She's coming.
Yes, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. I've told you 1,000 times, Mary. It was that awful woman. She smacked me in the face with a cucumber. And so I smacked her back with 2 cucumbers right in both eyes.
Now, wow, that sounds terrible. Right in the eyes, you poked her with the...
Yeah, and then it was all on 2 swords dueling, but cucumbers. And then the carrots came in, and then there was lettuce in the faces. It was a lot for my sensibilities.
What I don't understand is how everyone got involved.
A lot of things.
How did everyone get involved? Did you start throwing food at everyone?
Well, once that terrible woman slapped me in the face with a cucumber, then all of my other friends, yes, we all came together.
Factions.
Yeah. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because like I said, I'm a bit of a fan. It was kind of about... I mean, like race, right? Like ethnicity came into this a bit, right?
Oh, yes. Every wave of new people coming into the city, had their challenges, for sure.
Yes, so many filthy new foreigners coming into the...
Oh, well, it's good to know some things never change. Mrs. King, thank you so much for your time, but I do see you have some more guests over there, if you could...
Are you kicking me out? I just wanted... You're such a nice boy.
No, my apologies, but you gotta...
That's so rude! Everybody here is so rude!
Wow.
Oh, see what I mean?
Yeah, she's a lot.
She's difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so why don't you show me around this amazing market? I mean, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for me and my listeners.
All right, so let's go. Can we go in the opposite direction of Mrs. King?
Yeah, let's... Yeah, she's sort of across the way from you.
I feel like she might, at some point, hit me with a cucumber.
Yeah, I feel like that cucumber war might have been not the first time she's started a fight with vegetables.
Yeah, she's got... I mean, I don't know who grows her vegetables. I should find out, but she's got quite sizable cucumbers. And I feel like it would really hurt if she smacked me with one. I wouldn't put it past her.
She seems quite cantankerous, as they say.
All right, so if we go in this direction over here, there's a lady who makes soaps, her and her husband. Now, I don't know how much they sell because most people make their own soap, don't you know?
All right.
But in the city, you know, some people don't know how to do things.
Sure,
so
sure,
you can
sure.
sell them stuff that you wouldn't sell.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Nobody that I know, including myself in 2024, knows how to make our own soap anymore. So
you're kidding.
No, yeah. So.
Oh, Well, where'd you get it?
We buy it from markets like this or from... we have big markets called grocery stores. And yeah, anyway, it's a... I don't want to get into it.
Honestly, I'm just fascinated. Just fascinated.
As am I. I'm going to try to stay focused on the past.
So it's not... Well, it's really the present.
Oh, sure, for you.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Some folks say the only thing that ever really exists is the present.
That's very wise.
Thank you.
Well, I might steal that too. And then I'll be an entrepreneur, artisan,
queen.
Therapist, barista, queen, philosopher.
Philosopher, absolutely.
Oh.
Incredible.
It's, you know, the sign maker's going to make a lot of money off me.
Sure, sure.
And look where we are here. Here's the sign maker.
Oh, it's the sign maker. Good day,
yes,
sir.
Yes.
Good day to you. Would you like a sign?
Oh, I think he's from France or something. I can never understand what he says.
That's very nice. Mary, you say nice things about me. Come on, I say nice things about you.
Oh, do you now?
Hi, my name's Errol Gribble, host of Troll in the Mitten. I should probably not get into what all of that is. But hi, this is a wonderful stand you got here. These are great signs. Tell us your name.
I don't know.
Great. I'm not going to ask you to spell that. Well, it was very nice meeting you. Keep up the good work. And thank you for making our future better, I guess. All right.
And so. I'll be back because I fear I might need a sign made.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. And what's next? What else we got here?
And as we come around the corner here, this is...
Oh, excuse me, pardon. Oh, this place is busy.
Now, the ribbons.
Ribbons.
So there's lovely, all about in Detroit, there's lovely hatteries, hat makers, milliners.
Yeah.
But some folks still like to make things themselves, I suppose. So this nice... A couple here sells all kinds of ribbons and embellishments, hat pins, other things you might need for your making your hats.
Yeah.
But I'm hold on for a sec. I do have to purchase a hat pin.
Oh, okay. Please.
I lost my hat pin, and you know, hat pins are very, very important for a woman. You know why?
Why?
Well, you know, it keeps the hat on your head. You put the hat right through your hair and hopefully not through your skull.
Sure.
But also, they're quite a handy weapon.
Oh, I can imagine.
They are.
Sure. Have you ever had to use one of those here at the market?
I have not.
Oh, thank goodness.
But I've heard tell of women on the streetcars and in the crowds. You know how the men can sometimes behave.
Sure.
And then you don't want a hat pinned to your temple.
No, but you may have had to do that to a gentleman before.
If I had done it to a gentleman before, I wouldn't tell you.
Oh, good for you.
But
and
let's
I would
just
never
say,
meet you.
I think it's preventative, sort of, because I think with every single woman in the whole city is armed with a hat pin because she's got one in her hat.
Oh.
And, you know, I think men are aware of that.
That's good.
And so what you don't want is to be without one.
Yeah.
And hopefully you never have to use
well,
it.
Well, that's, thank goodness.
Yeah.
It's good to know that maybe in 1888, women might not have had the rights that they do in 2024, but you've got hat pins.
Oh, wait.
You've got the weapons.
Oh, there it is. I found it. Oh, for heaven's sakes.
It
was buried so deep in my hair.
Wow.
Yes.
I mean, you do have a lot of hair. It's very, very
you
lovely.
Know what? Oh, well, you know what we do?
No.
Well, it's very attractive for a woman to have a lot of hair.
Okay.
And you want to have a lot of hair to put your hat pin through.
Sure.
And so we all collect our hair from our hairbrushes. And we make our buns and things out of
it. Oh, look at that. It comes right off.
There you go.
Wow. Wow. We have something like that in the future. It's called extensions, I think. Or for men, toupees. I don't know.
Do they save their own hair like we do?
Sometimes.
Oh.
But usually they just buy it.
How do you buy hair?
Well, some people donate. Sometimes it's fake hair.
Oh.
We can make fake hair. Sometimes it's animal hair.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't...
Well, that makes sense. That makes sense.
I had a buddy who wore a toupee made out of horsehair once. He didn't have a lot of friends, though, so... Anyway, let's move along. What is that? I definitely smell fish.
Oh, yes. Oh, no, I've said this often enough. I'm so glad that my stall is on the other side of the market.
Yeah.
Because, you know...
is this a fishmonger?
It's a fishmonger, indeed. Indeed.
Well, this is a really great market. There's a lot of wonderful vendors here and weird and wonderful and kind of terrible smells as well. I will say, There's a lot more, like, smells of, like, feces.
Well, it's the horses, you know.
Yeah.
So, I
like,
mean,
it's just, there's just, like, piles all over the place.
Well, they're starting to say that they want to keep wagons out of the market.
Yeah, that's
like
a good
idea.
Like,
it's a whole, well, but then what are the farmers going to do? You can't have a market without farmers.
Oh, sure.
And they need to bring their wares in the wagons.
Maybe they should pay somebody to shovel this stuff up.
I feel like that might be a good idea.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. And then the farmer should take it back with them.
Oh, there you go. So before we go, I'm going to somehow figure out a way to get back to the future. It's been wonderful meeting you and having you show us around the market. For people who want to get started in the market, or for anybody who wants to know, like, how to really thrive in 1888, like, because you know, I would like to say that you thrived. Would you agree?
I feel like
you're thriving.
That's a good assessment.
So what's some advice you would give folks?
Well, you have to start with a little bit of money. Otherwise, what are you going to do?
Start with money.
Or okay. You do what Nancy Martin did, and you make sure that you're in partnership with someone.
Okay. Who has money or vegetables.
If you know a farmer who doesn't bring their wares to market, maybe you can take some of the wares to market for them and get started that way.
So you would say that, like, being engaged in your community, building community, is how you thrive?
Yeah, no, I didn't say that.
Okay.
I don't even know what that means. What are you saying?
All right, don't worry about it.
I mean, I was keeping up with you up until then, but I feel like you went to a place that I don't know.
Well, you know, I think it's one of the things that's true both in the past and in my present, in your future, is that, like, being friends with the people around you, talking to them, having relationships.
Have you met Mrs. King?
Well, not everybody, but, okay. You know.
Yeah. I feel like perhaps being on my own is the best thing I can do.
All right, so that's how you thrive.
There you go.
Rugged individualism.
I like that. Oh. So I'm a rugged individualist, entrepreneur,
just ruined everything.
Artisan, queen, barista.
That's right.
That's me.
And I'm just shady. Thank you so much for being on the show.
It was very nice to meet you. You're very odd.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll be right back. That's all for today, Hooper Scoopers. Remember, you can listen to this and every one of our episodes on lccconnect.org, plus all your major streaming platforms. Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you had as much fun as we did. And until next time, if you seek a pleasant peninsula, look about you.
Examining the issues and topics that affect our lives from the local level to the world stage. Listen to the programs of LCC Connect anytime at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Stay connected with LCC Stars Athletics. Find game schedules, stats, and live streams for our sports programs at lccstars.com.
Feeling froggy? Well, leap into 20-plus podcasts at lccconnect.org.
Art Happens Here, the podcast that explores the often curious and occasionally amazing art installations on, in, and around the campuses of Lansing Community College. I'm your host, Bruce Mackley.
Listen to this program and many others on demand at lccconnect.org.
I'm William Shatner, and I've been around a long time, but I'm truly humbled when I see the real battles our brave, paralyzed veterans have faced defending our freedom.
I was on a routine patrol, and we were in the desert of Kuwait, and the vehicle flipped and landed on top of me, which left me paralyzed from the waist down.
Okay, folks, this is heroism. That's why I'm proud to support Paralyzed Veterans of America. Go to pva.org to learn how you can make a difference.
Returning to school can be a challenge. If you're a recent high school grad, a new Michigan Reconnect participant at LCC, or a GED holder, we want to help you succeed with extra support in reading, writing, and math. LCC's Coalition for College and Career Readiness presents College Connect, a four-week, no-cost initiative created to prepare students with the tools needed to succeed at LCC. College Connect begins in July, but seating is limited. To find deadline and enrollment information, visit lcc.edu/cc.
This is WLNZ Lansing. You're listening to LCC Connect, a weekly program that features the voices, vibes, and vision of Lansing Community College. To find out more about LCC Connect programs or to listen on demand, visit us at lccconnect.org.
LCC Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.